Manifested Live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
Point of View.
Monday to Thursday, 8 to 10 p.m.
It's 2 minutes after eight. Welcome to Point of View. My name is Pimelo Modena. It's our Monday edition of Point of View. So, as you know, we have elections on Kaya. That's our hashtag, and that's what we do every Monday. We look at a political party or an independent candidate who's going to be vying for the position of president, and we'll also be looking at the provincial candidates as well from tomorrow. And today, we will have Claudio Motsoeneng. You remember him? Yeah. He is now the leader of ACM. That's African Content Movement. We'll have him in studio just after 9 o'clock, so do stay tuned. We obviously look at the manifesto, we look at what they have to offer, and you also have an opportunity to ask all those difficult questions. So that's what's going to be happening today just after 9 o'clock.
Kaya Talk,
Monday to Thursday, 8 to 10 p.m.
086-00-00959, that's the number to dial. You can also send a voice note on WhatsApp on 063-688-0959. You can also tweet us, by the way, at Kaya on Air. You can tag me at Pimelo Modene. Now, this story, obviously, we've been talking about it because the IEC has told us that they want to go to the Constitutional Court to, and this name and this word is contested, appeal, basically, the ruling by the court. It was an order by the court that said that actually they should keep Jacob Zuma on the ballot. They should keep him as a candidate that was forwarded by MK Party. On the line with us is former IEC Commissioner Terry Tselane, who is on the line with us this evening. Terry, thank you so much for your time. Good evening and welcome.
Good evening to you and to your listeners, and thank you very much for having me.
It feels like we've been having this conversation over and over again, but I just want to hear again now from your perspective, the fact that the IEC has decided now to go to the Constitutional Court, and many are saying to appeal, others are saying no, it's not to appeal, it's to seek clarity. Where do you stand on that one?
It's a very strange thing because the courts do not provide clarity. They give judgments. In other words, there's got to be a dispute, and it is through the adjudication of that dispute that you will then get clarity. You can't go to court and say, I'm just here to get clarity. I'm not here for any other reason. So there's got to be a dispute. So you got to appeal, like in this case, they are appealing the decision of the Electoral Court, even though they're saying that it is, they're seeking clarity. It will provide clarity. Even the judgment of the Electoral Court would still provide clarity because courts operate through judgment and not any other way.
So should, in your view, the IEC have waited for the absolute and I suppose the full judgment of the order they had given before they went to the Constitutional Court?
Of course, my opinion is always that the commission rushed. They should have waited until the constitutional, rather the electoral court has made its judgment on this issue. They've given an order. We don't know what the reasons are. And they should have waited for that because they would get clarity from the judgment. Like I said before, you get clarity through judgment. There is no other way that you are going to get clarity from a court of law without a judgment. There's got to be a judgment, then you can say, I am clarified.
Terry, in the event that another one of these cases lands again, another objection lands again, and maybe, of course, not on this particular election, but in the following election, there's another objection to a candidate, and this was not taken forward to the Constitutional Court. In your view, what then would have been the IEC's natural reaction?
Well, I don't know, but all I know is that in the previous occasions where you had a clear objector, such as in the CAM and Thobe matter in Trogwe, you had a person who was aggrieved by the decision of the commission. Mm-hmm. That person took the decision of the commission to the electoral court. Mm-hmm. They lost at the electoral court level. Mm-hmm. They then proceeded to go to the constitutional court. Mm-hmm. And the Constitutional Court found in their favor through their judgment. So that's how the issue of addresses was clarified by the Constitutional Court. It was through a judgment after someone had actually taken the commission to the Constitutional Court.
So in a way, are you saying the person or the people who are the ones who had an objection, it would have been them who should have been pursuing this matter, not necessarily the commission?
Absolutely, because Section 30, for instance, gives the chief electoral officer power to object. And the reason why this is there in the legislation is because the commission has got semi-judicial powers when it comes to the adjudication of objections. And therefore, it would look at the objections, including the objection from the chief electoral officer, and takes a decision. And then once they have taken a decision, it is no longer their issue. It is the objector who, in terms of Section 30, will then take the matter to the electoral court if they are not happy with the decision of the commission. It is not the commission, which, for instance, has not actually been the objector, that would actually go and appeal. Like I said, I find it difficult to understand exactly what they're appealing. And then I'm saying there is no such thing as clarity at the court. You go there for a judgment. And it is that judgment, when you look at it, it has clarified certain things that you were doubtful about, that you can say, now I have clarity. So in this instance, processes that are there in Section 30 of the Electoral Act are not really being followed, because, as I've suggested, it would have been the chief electoral officer who, after having done an assessment of candidates, would have come to the conclusion that this particular candidate does not actually qualify, and then take that issue to, and then make an objection to the commission. And the commission, that is like almost a semi-judicial body, will then look at that objection, and then after that, take a decision, and then its decision can be appealed at the electoral court. And then once it has been appealed at the electoral court, the person who has lost the appeal can then go to another level if they are not happy with the decision of the electoral court.
I'm a bit confused about something, Terry. The list is already out. They are now pursuing this route. What then do you think is going to happen between now and that constitutional court, I suppose, if the constitutional court comes with a different order or a judgment? What then happens to the process that have already taken place?
I don't know, really, even whether that is possible for the constitutional court to come to a different understanding of the issues, and whether the constitutional court would actually issue a judgment before a judgment of the electoral court has actually been issued.
Gotcha.
It would be very strange. And then here is another issue. They are contesting the issue of
Section 47 1E
of Section 47. And what if the electoral court then comes to a decision that the reason why they have taken this decision and given this order, it's not in line with Section 47 1E. In fact, they agree with the interpretation by the commission, but they have taken into consideration two other issues that were raised, which is firstly whether the commission has got the power to administer Section 47 and whether one of the commissioners is conflicted.
Mm-hmm.
Because there were three main reasons that were raised.
Sure.
And then you don't know how the court is going to make its judgment.
Mm. Look, thank you very much for all your interpretation, IEC, former IEC commissioner, as well as Institute of Election Management Institute in Africa, Services in Africa. That's Teretselane there giving us his take as someone who has been at the helm at the IEC and how he sees it. Benedict Peary, legal expert, is listening into that conversation. Thanks very much for your time, Benedict. Welcome to Point of View.
Well, good evening, and good evening to the listeners.
I really have to ask you your view on this. So let me just first understand how you feel about the IEC making a decision to go ahead to the Constitutional Court. Teretselane has just argued that, look, it's a little bit premature. Your sense on that?
I definitely don't think it's premature. I do accept and acknowledge that the reasons for that order are still being awaited. But, you know, the order is wrong. And when an order is wrong, you know, even if the reasons come later, that application will be supplemented to the Constitutional Court to expand on those particular reasons. But I certainly think that the order is wrong. Mr. Zuma should not have been allowed to be eligible for election to the National Assembly on account of his conviction and sentence and the fact that he hasn't set out the 5-year cooling off period.
Okay, so on the other two matters, how do you feel about that?
So yes, I do believe that the IEC does have jurisdiction to adjudicate the objection, as Mr. Salami has just indicated, mm-hmm. that falls within its powers. And, you know, to the extent that an objector or the other person is not happy with that decision, then it's appealable to the next level. Mm-hmm. So I do not believe that Mr. Zuma will succeed on the point that the IEC does not have jurisdiction to entertain an objection in respect of eligibility to the National Assembly. With respect to the bias, the question will be, to what extent does it disturb what is actually a legal conclusion? Because, you know, if you get to a point where you say Mr. Zuma does have a conviction and he was sentenced for over 15 months, and that he hasn't actually set out his 5-year cooling off period, if you get to that point, then it's the law that blocks you from participating. And the extent of the bias is, you know, to the extent that it's there, it operates very minimally, because that decision will be that decision whether someone has bias or not. So I'm not sure to what extent it vitiates the decision of the IEC in the way that they've actually dealt with that objection, because ultimately that's the conclusion you'd have to get to.
So in your view, who should be going to the Constitutional Court, the IEC or the objector?
I think the IEC should be going to the Constitutional Court, because mm-hmm. the matter raises a constitutional question. Mm-hmm. The question is, if a candidate is not eligible to be in the National Assembly in terms of Section 47(1)(e), who then has the ability to adjudicate that state of affairs? The other argument is that the National Assembly should do it, but there's no legislative framework for the National Assembly to do it. That power resides with the IEC. So it is the right party to go to court so that it can clarify how it actually undertakes its duties under the Act.
Mr. Tselane pointed the fact that there should be a judgment before the Constitutional Court takes this matter forward. Do you agree with that or not?
No, I don't agree with that. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, so the application is there. I think the court will take cognizance of the application, the Constitutional Court. And, you know, in applications, we are permitted to supplement the papers if there are facts that happened before, you know, between the period when the application is lodged and when the application is heard. Mm. You may say to the court, I did bring this application on an urgent basis. There was no reasons for the judgment. The reasons are here. And in amplification of my grounds of appeal, I point out that this paragraph is wrong, you know, so the reasons don't support the conclusion and vice versa. So it doesn't preclude you. You're not precluded from going to court without that judgment, because you can always supplement your papers.
But that, I suppose, would have to happen while the Constitutional Court is hearing the matter.
Prior. So what typically happens at the Constitutional Court is that the registrar will write back to the applicant and the parties and confirm whether the court will hear the matter, and then give direction as to how the rest of the matter will proceed. So the Constitutional Court may, as part of the direction, say this is when the matter will be heard, and we've noted that, you know, the judgment is not yet there, and therefore it should be supplemented by a certain date, and the respondents to respond to the supplementation by a certain date, etc. So those directives can be issued by the Constitutional Court, and often the Constitutional Court does do that when it comes to matters.
Is that not necessarily seen as unfair pressure on the electoral court to push on and quickly give us a judgment that may have taken maybe another 3 weeks?
The Act, though, does provide that electoral matters must be dealt with urgently. So that electoral court, insofar as it's putting that judgment together, it would have always been under pressure because the matter has to be dealt with urgently. So we are awaiting it. Yes, they have to do a good job and make sure that it's a well-reasoned judgment that supports the order they have granted. But that job would have been an urgent job in any event because of the nature of the matter.
If this did not go to the Constitutional Court, are they compelled to issue a judgment? Or could they just give us an order and not necessarily have to give us a judgment?
They did indicate that they would give an order and that the reasons for the order would follow.
Yeah.
And it's the usual practice that an order is accompanied by the reasons for the judgment, because as we're talking about it now, it assists with the appealability, it assists with clarification of how the court has interpreted the law, it assists with where the law is currently at the moment, and any further developments from that.
And just for clarity, again, you are saying, in your view, they were wrong. In this instance, Mr. Zuma was not supposed to be on that ballot.
In my view, they are wrong. Mr. Zuma should not be eligible for election to parliament. He may contest any other position in political office because he does have that right under the Constitution.
Yes.
But when it comes to parliament, he's disqualified by virtue of his conviction and sentence and the fact that it hasn't been a period of 5 years.
Mm. Thanks so much for your time, legal expert Benedict Phiri. Your take on all of this, 086-000-0959. We'll obviously have to wait and see how far this goes, and we'll keep track of it. You can also send us a voice note on 063-688-0959. It's 19 minutes after 8.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.